as much as anything, it was all the theatre of the service from the head waiter there, Jose Ramon Calvo. It was just absolutely brilliant.
Restaurants would be nothing without their customers, and there is no more loyal, committed and appreciative customer of restaurants that I know than the person we are going to speak to as part of Dirty Linen's summer series today. His name is Jeff Brady. He is a Melbourne vet. He's the original Thermomix blogger. He's the person that I knew I needed to speak to first when I even thought about doing Thermomix books many years ago. Jeff Brady, I am really thrilled to welcome you to Dirty Linen today.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation.
Jeff, you're someone that will travel far to eat. You will plan journeys around food, and you're also, a very keen diner in Australia. I'm really sorry that I asked you to narrow it down to three favourite meals, but I am really curious to know what you've chosen.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a bit like asking which of yours are the favourite daughters, but anyway, the three meals that I've chosen, one was the first Michelin star meal I ever had, and that was at Arpège in 1988. Another was a dinner that Philippe Michel did for Carlo Petrini, head of Slow Food, back in 99. And then the third one was my first meal at Mugaritz in 2005.
Oh, my goodness. I just love that we are going back to the archives. So let's go in the order that you ate and spoke of these meals, and let's go back to Arpège.
Arpège in 1988. It was the first time I'd been in France and wanted to go to a Michelin star restaurant, and the date that we had was a Monday, and so the only there weren't any three Michelin star restaurants, so we chose this little place called Arpège. At that stage it just had two stars, and I thought, oh well, we'll see what it's like. It was mind-blowing. So the first dish was the chauffeur œuf, the hot and cold egg, which is pretty legendary. And that was a great start. There were all sorts of interesting combinations. There was lobster with turnip. There was crab in cabbage rolls with salmon blood sauce. But the thing that really blew my mind was the tomato dessert, the tomate confit avec du saveur, the tomatoes with the stuffed with nuts and fruits, dried fruits, and cooked in a caramel sauce. Using tomatoes as a fruit for dessert in those days was a bit unusual. And it was just an absolutely incredible meal. And we had a great time. And so, yeah, I've been back a few times. And, of course, when Monsieur Passard came to Australia in 2017, I had to go down to Tasmania to check that out too.
Yeah, well, we were at that amazing lunch together near Launceston with Alan Passard. And, of course, his restaurant has now had three stars, but I don't know how long. It's certainly a pilgrimage for many people, one that I haven't been fortunate enough to take yet. And, I mean, one of the things that Alan Passard is known for is his use of vegetables. I mean, he really went pretty much all veg at Arpège for a long period. And it sounds like, you know, that tomato dessert that you speak of might have been part of that culinary quest.
Yeah, I think he certainly used vegetables differently than a lot of other people back in the 1980s when he first set up Arpège. But then, what was it, about 2000, 2001, I think he went all vegetarian. Everyone thought he was an idiot because he had a three Michelin star restaurant and people just couldn't believe what he was doing. But it stood the test of time, and the meals with just vegetables there, he does some really, really creative things with vegetables there. Just love it.
Mm. I remember I interviewed him when he was in Tassie, and it's so nice. He's such a great person to talk to about food and the way he puts dishes together. And I just I often think about the way he talked about colors of vegetables and, you know, the way that certain foods just sort of tell you that they want to be together. It's like he really converses with vegetables, I reckon.
Yeah, he does. And I think with the thing with colors too, he's an artist, and so he does a whole lot of painting, and so he has a great eye for color and combinations.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, wonderful. What a fantastic landmark on your first trip to France, Jeff. Okay, what was number two?
Number two was a slow food dinner that Philippe Michel did in a little private dining room at Langton's downstairs back in 1988 when Carlo Petrini came to Australia. James Broadway at that stage was head of slow food in Australia, and James had invited Carlo out, and I was very fortunate to be invited along to this little dinner that was put on. James had organised a whole lot of winemakers from around Victoria. James Halliday was there. Rick from Gioconda, Michael Dillon from Bindi, Fred Pizzini, Ron Lawton. There were all these great winemakers there, and I got a Guernsey because I had some interesting old white wines in my cellar that I think James knew about. And so there were a couple of wines. One was 1970 Lindemann Chablis. It used to be called, I can't think of the name, Bin 3875 from memory. And then there was another 1984 Mount Pleasant Lovedale Semillon, which were, well, the 1970 Chablis was at that stage nearly 30 years old. And I think that it was still drinking really, really well. And that blew Carlo Petrini's mind, the fact that we in Australia had the ability to produce wines like that. So that was a great meal. And Philippe excelled himself with the food, of course.
So, I mean, there's so many legends in that room, Jeff. That sounds incredible. And what a thrill to be able to open a bottle of wine that you'd cellared yourself and to blow people's minds. That's extraordinary. So, yeah, Philippe Michel, you know, for people who don't know, he's just such an extraordinary figure in Australian dining. We're so lucky to have him here. He came out to Australia to open restaurant Paul Bocuse at Daimaru. And he was cooked a long time at Langton's in Flinders Lane. And then James Broadway, who we've had on the podcast, is now one of the owners of Osteria Tedesca on the Mornington Peninsula, and has also been, you know, an extraordinary figure in local, I guess, wine service and restaurants as well. Do you remember anything about the meal that was served on that night?
One of the things was a pigeon breast and sweetbread dish that was served with a Rouennaise sauce, using the blood from the pigeon carcass to produce the sauce. That was one of the things. But yeah, it was just unbelievable. And then it was at a time when Nick Haddo and Will Studd were planning on heading off to Italy and France, and we went to Bra and met up again with Carlo Petrini in Bra at the slow cheese event. So it was all pretty remarkable.
Are you a person that keeps menus from things like this and files them away?
I do. I can't find the menu from that night just at the moment. But
no, that's, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, one thing I do remember from that night was purchased a book, Australian Food, I think in celebration of a new cuisine or something along those lines. Alan Saunders had written the foreword to it, and I had a number of chefs that had signed it, and then all the winemakers signed it, and we gave it to Carlo Petrini. So that's in the head of Slow Food, or the Slow Food Library back in Bra at the moment. So that was pretty special too.
That's so nice. Wow. That's so thoughtful.
Well, Philippe is one of those people. I remember the first meal I had at his restaurant when he was at Paul Bocuse, and he did the red mullet with potato scales, which I know you have had a bash at trying to recreate. It's not easy. No, there's a few little secrets that you sort of need to know about with cooking slowly, and they use silicone paper or something like that to help stop it from sticking to the pan. So you need to know all the secrets anyway.
I almost love trying those really chefy dishes and completely failing at them because, you know, it just reminds you why you need restaurants.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's fun to try. So that dish, it's so famous. It's like you make little circles out of potatoes and as though they're fish scales and then, like, you know, lay them over the one side of the fish and then you try to cook it and you flip it and it's all supposed to look like fish scales. And of course, mine just looked like one pile of potatoes and a semi-cooked fish. But anyway, it still tasted good. Okay, so Jeff, we've been 1988 in Paris, 1998 in Melbourne, and where are we going next?
So Mugaritz on the 9th of October 2005. Tony Tan organised a tour to Spain and we went to Mugaritz. It was the first time I'd been to Mugaritz, and it was, as much as anything, it was all the theatre of the service from the head waiter there, José Ramón Calvo. It was just absolutely brilliant. The food was superb. We got to meet Anthony, there was one of the things that started off was a little berry that I think was a South American fruit, and we were given this berry and just put it on your tongue and it just numbed your palate and you thought, oh God, how am I ever going to be able to taste anything for the rest of the meal? But it all wore off after a couple of minutes, and then you were able to get into the whole meal. And there was some wonderful dishes. There was some superb foie gras with an old Oloroso sherry. There was the dish that I remember most about was with theatre, was Jose came to the table with these two pieces of charcoal and sort of banged them together so they made a loud noise. And he said, oh, now, in the kitchen here, we've worked out how to cook these long and slow and soften them up, which was all rubbish. But anyway, it was all a theatre. So what happened was they had I think it was cassava root that they had put either squid ink or charcoal or something around the outside, ash around the outside, so that it looked like this piece of charcoal that you'd seen previously, or a piece of charcoal, but when you cut into it, it was nice and soft and delicious. There was a dish of torrijas, which is like the Spanish version of French bread, which was just divine. There were so many things. I remember a dish with borage stems and borage flowers. I actually have photos, and I made it into a collage. I've made a collage to put up on the wall, and that's down in the kitchen at the moment with all the different pictures from that day at Mugaritz. But probably the most important thing on that day was we met Dan Hunter, because Dan was the head chef at Mugaritz at that time. And so that was the start of a great friendship. And certainly lots of meals with Dan Hunter have occurred since then.
Wow, that's amazing, because I think he was the head chef at Mugaritz for about 3 years, wasn't he, before?
Yeah, something like that, yep.
Something like that, before he returned to Australia. And now, of course, he's at Bray and doing incredible things there. I have been fortunate enough to eat at Mugaritz and also had a really great time. And I think, yeah, what I remember probably most strikingly, other than the food, is that playfulness and that sort of real delight in building up expectations and then, you know, taking a detour and turning it all into something else. There was a real sense of fun. And I think it's possibly that, you know, has been, you know, has travelled internationally as much as anything as regards the cuisine from Mugaritz. It's just that real delight in innovation and creativity.
Yeah, one of the memories I have was a meal, I think about 2014, when they had a dish which involved using a mortar and pestle to help grind up some of the ingredients for a soup. The first time we had the dish, it was just sort of brought to the table, and everyone around the restaurant did it at different times. But then they had worked out that they got everyone to be served this dish, even if it was served at different sort of times during the actual menu, everyone was served this dish with the mortar and pestle. So it was a bit like working on the chain gang. There was always bang, bang, bang right through the whole restaurant. It was amazing. Absolute theatre.
That is so nice because it's such a spacious dining room. You really do have the sense of, you know, being in your own world and having your own experience there. But that must have been such a really beautiful way to bring everybody together.
It was, yeah. Everyone started laughing after they sort of realised that we were all hard at work creating our own lunch.
When I was there, which I think was 2015, Kylie Miller, another Australian chef, was working there. And, you know, she was known in Australia for her dessert work and pastry, but she was there on the fish section. And I think she was just really loving being thrown in to something completely unfamiliar. And yeah, working with all those different fish up in the Basque country in the north of Spain. It was just, yeah, it's definitely a restaurant that so many people have worked in and gone through and come out with, you know, incredible, I guess, energy and ideas.
Yep. It's a great place.
Wonderful, Jeff. Well, you have taken us around the world and through time. I'm really appreciative. Yeah, it's such a pleasure to get your perspective on dining. And again, I thank you for the enormously difficult task of coming up with just three meals to talk about today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the invitation.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you. This.